It's always a good idea to have a competent adult check your Halloween candy before eating it. But what are they checking for? And is poisoned Halloween candy really something we should be cautious about? That's what we're talking about today on Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Cautionary tales, stories that are passed down or around. But are they always true? Do we really know their true meaning or intent? This is the podcast where we dive into cautionary tales, superstitions, mysteries, and more to discover the truth behind the tale. This is Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Yep, and don't forget to subscribe on wherever you download podcasts. It's me, Harper, and my co-host, Tony Brewski, my dad. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here on your very first podcast that is all yours.
I love this.
It's weird being in the co-host position here, but I figure at 7, it's time to get you going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited about this Cautionary Tales with Harper and Halloween candy.
I absolutely love Halloween candy. In fact, my favorite Halloween candy is a Tootsie Roll.
Tootsie Roll?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Tootsie Roll is your favorite Halloween candy.
What? They're great.
Well, what? I mean, when you have all of the Halloween candy options that are out there, you have, I mean, everything. There's caramel, there's chocolate, there's nuts, there's all different sweets. And you really stick with the classics, don't you?
Yeah.
Why is Tootsie Roll your favorite Halloween candy?
Because I've been eating it since I was 3.
I think even younger than that, actually. What I used to do when you were really little and you were even in your crib, but you could chew. I wasn't like giving like a baby candy that couldn't, you know, chew. You loved candy, and I remember I would always sneak you like a Tootsie Roll at night, like before you brushed your teeth or something. So maybe that's why Tootsie Roll is the one that you go with.
Yeah.
Because it's this warm, fuzzy memory. Okay, so what's a Halloween candy that you absolutely hate?
If I'm being honest.
Like worst one, the one you want to trade.
Let me think.
If you had to pick one, what would it be?
Whoppers.
Whoppers? Those are some of the best. The malted milk balls. Yeah. For me, it's the they're called peanut butter kisses. They're not peanut butter cups. They're not Reese's peanut butter cups. They're kisses. I didn't even think you got any last year.
I haven't even heard of peanut butter
kisses. They're like wrapped in orange or black. It's almost like wax paper. And then it's kind of taffy-like consistency. And supposedly there's a little bit of peanut butter in there, but it's like peanut butter flavored taffy that tastes more like bad wax. And I my dad loves them. Your grandpa loves them. To me, they're like the most worthless Halloween candy that there is out there. But yeah.
If peanut butter is not paired with chocolate, then it's my worst enemy.
Yeah, you'd have the two together.
Yeah, peanut butter and chocolate. It's just, you can't have peanut butter without chocolate.
Sure.
Like if I had a bowl of peanut butter, I would have to get a candy bar and dip it into the peanut butter.
Just to make it work?
Yeah. Yeah,
I see what you're saying, as you're just saying. But obviously, that's not really what we're talking about today. It's not our favorite candies, but we're talking more so about the concern, the thing that people talk about, the thing that you've learned that this is what you do, because I do it every year to your Halloween candy, and that's checking it. That's, you know, before we let you dig into it, the grown-ups should be checking the candy.
Is it true that pins, needles, and razor blades have been found in trick-or-treat candy?
That's the question. That's the question that everybody wonders about. That's the one that we've heard about over the years. That's the one that when somebody says, why are you checking the candy? The answer is usually, well, we got to make sure there's no pins, needles, things aren't open, no razor blades, and all that. So let me ask you, I mean, that's what you hear. That's what you hear grown-ups saying. I'm sure at school they encouraged, or did they encourage, saying, make sure your parents check your Halloween candy.
No, they actually never said anything about that.
Well, maybe they should. According to Snopes, although random Halloween candy poisonings are confirmed really to be in the realm of urban legend, there are actual cases of tampered trick-or-treat candy involving the insertion of pins, needles, razor blades that have been documented. It's not just 100% in urban legend. It really isn't. But the thing is, it kind of goes in one of those things where once you say it out loud, once you present the idea out there, people do it. It almost becomes copycat. So the legend really began before the crime.
Wow.
Actually happened. And then people, you know, had it. Have you ever found anything weird in your Halloween candy?
No.
No?
No.
Do you double check your Halloween candy?
No.
You feel like it's good once I've given it to you?
It's candy.
Well, it's candy, but here's the thing. According to Snopes, cases have constituted different types of tampering than poisoning for a couple of reasons. First, the expected level of harm is severely reduced. Poison, when you poison something, it's an attempt to kill. A pin in an apple is an attempt to frighten or injure. You're likely not going to get killed from the pin in the apple. Although, I mean, you could argue it if you swallowed it. That's not going to do any good for your inside. So it could potentially lead to that. According to Snopes, Professor Joel Best reported that he was able to track about 80 cases of sharp objects in food since 1959. Now, this is not necessarily all Halloween candy by any means.
It's like food in general. Yeah.
But almost all of the cases that were reported were hoaxes. Only about 10 culminated in even minor injury. In the worst case, a woman required just a few stitches compared to eat something and die. A couple of stitches, you know, it really kind of barely registers on the scale there of this is super, super dangerous. Second, the motivation for the pins and needles tampering that goes on, it's a little bit different. Poison is an attempt to kill, but hiding a needle in an apple, it's a prank, but it's a sick prank. It's one you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't ever do it, okay?
Yeah.
It could hurt you. It could seriously injure you. You wouldn't put a razor blade or a pin in an apple. But some dumb people have thought this would be a fun prank. In those instances where the insertion could be traced back to a specific person, it was almost some sort of a kid intent on freaking out either their little brother or their parents, or getting the community in an uproar on their version of a Halloween quote-unquote trick. Yeah, exactly. So pranking, especially when it's scary or slightly mean, it is part of Halloween, but it shouldn't be part of putting sharp objects in food. Various kids or young adults who've tampered with treats most likely never fully considered the potential of their joke, the consequence of the joke before embarking on it, which is where a lot of this stuff, you know, it gets reported, it gets found out, and they never thought by doing this, you know, it could cause some serious uproar. An incident that broke with the pattern occurred actually in 2000, which to you seems like a long time ago. To me, it's well after my trick-or-treating years. A 49-year-old man, James Joseph Smith, he was charged with one count of adulterating a substance with intent to cause death or harm or illness after it was determined he'd put needles in a Snickers bar and handed them out to kids on Halloween. A 14-year-old was pricked by a needle hidden in a bar that he bit into, but he did not require medical attention. So, another author says, Jack Santino, noted back in the history of Halloween, pins and needles and the rumors began to really push that poison candy rumor in the mid-1960s. And nearly all of the reports up until that 2000 incident, and for the most part since then, have all been hoaxes. And have not been something that have been happening that are actually going on. Now, that's not to say that you could have more copycats that would do this again. That's why we still check the candy.
Yeah.
So knowing that, have you had any sort of fear about your Halloween candy?
It's candy. Why should I be afraid of it?
You're just ready to dig right in.
Heck yeah.
Okay. Well, let's dig into that just a little bit further onto the history.
How far back does this cautionary tale go?
Back in 1967, the focus of the legend, it shifted dramatically from the poison to razors and sharp objects in an apple. Which, if you got an apple, would you eat it in your Halloween candy?
It's supposed to be candy.
Yeah, what's your reaction when you get things like that?
Didn't I get a skinny pop in my Halloween candy?
What's a skinny pop?
The popcorn.
Oh yeah, skinny popcorn. You did. That's still in your candy bag.
And I'm not a big fan of skinny pops, so I just have been ignoring that.
I would have a feeling you may ignore the apple too if you did, and then you'd eventually see the razor. But the emergence of the razor blade, according to Snopes, remains to be studied, but it apparently spread rapidly in a lot of areas on the eastern seaboard in Canada. New York Times reported 13 cases from isolated communities in New Jersey and noted several others in Ottawa and Toronto in Canada. The outrage was so strong in New Jersey that the state legislature passed a law shortly before Halloween of 1968 mandating prison terms for those caught booby-trapping apples. Because that really is what it is when you're putting something in an object.
Why apples?
Because that was the object that was in question. Because it wasn't in a Snickers. People were doing, or a person did this into an apple.
Apples are so good.
It did not forestall the discovery of 13 more apples with razor blades that year, and 5 in New Jersey counties. In many cases, the New York Times story noted that children were cut, but the more detailed accounts included suspicious details. In one case, a boy came to his parents with an apple containing a razor blade that he had bit into the apple, he said, but not quite deeply enough to contact the blade. In another, the child said he found the blade while cutting out a rotten spot. In the third case, the razor was found when a child turned an apple over to his father for peeling. In all these cases, a child was not injured, and because he was the immediate source for the apple, kind of seems possible that maybe the kid was also the source of putting the blade in the apple and bringing it to mom and dad kind of for attention.
Why?
Because some kids do things like that for attention. They do.
And it's dumb.
Well, it is. But have you ever had friends do things that were dumb for attention?
Trust me, if I had friends that did that, I wouldn't be friends with them.
You've already pushed them out. So the second it happens, they're gone. More than 75% of the reported cases involved no injury. And in detailed follow-ups in 72 and 82 concluded that virtually all the reports were hoaxes concocted by children or parents. Thus, the legend seems to really have really grown out of the tradition of sensitive hoaxes, relying on understood oral tradition rather than any actual authenticated incidences of the razor blades being in the apples. There's not much out there that says this is something that has been happening, continues to happen, or has been an ongoing problem. Again, not to say that it couldn't happen. I think that's the scariest part about the whole thing, is the fact that it's something that it's easy to have happen.
You know, I once had a friend that ate almost like an unrolled Reese's Pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It was like almost, it looked like it was like stapled together.
It looked like it was stapled together?
Yeah, I tried to tell my friend, no, don't do it. Don't do it. It's mm-hmm. not going to end well.
And they ate it?
Yeah, they ate it, but turns out nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's never going to be a good idea to no matter where you are, no matter what situation, no matter how much you want the candy.
It was on a sidewalk.
Yeah. Okay, even worse. Even worse, you never eat candy that you find, or any food for that matter, that you're finding just on a sidewalk or on the street or something. You know, people do drop things, and sometimes you may even find it and it may look sealed, but you don't know how long it's been sitting out there. You don't know if, like, some sort of bug has gotten into it. That's where you almost get into more chances of poisoning or something because of the food being in a place that's not safe for it to be. If it looks stapled, I mean, it was most likely something where that opening of the wrapper got damaged and then it looked that way. But, you know, the possibility is there that it was tampered with. And then, I mean, somebody wouldn't, I think if you're trying to be sneaky, you wouldn't restaple something together if it's never had a staple in it. That would be a major sign of, look, I tampered with this food. But something where you're finding candy that it's already opened, even if it's in your trick-or-treat bag, that's something where you don't want to eat it if it's open. Mom and dad aren't perfect, I'll tell you that much. We do check the candy, but, you know, there could be a time where we miss a piece, where we miss something that's opened. So if you catch it later on and, like, this is open, you don't want to eat it if it's open. It's just a matter of being safe. Likely of anything, you know, bad happening, not really high, but it's not a chance worth taking over, you know, the 3 seconds of joy while you bite into that almond joy.
Yeah, it's just like, how would the piece of, like, what, like, let's say it's a razor blade, mm-hmm. how would it get in there and, like, look?
How would it look?
Like the candy itself, not mm-hmm. the packaging, mm-hmm. the candy itself. How would they get it in there?
You know that how would they get it in there is an easy one. The question is, how would you get it to look untampered with? And that's something I've always very much wondered about. Because a razor blade, you've seen a razor blade, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're sharp. So number one, getting it forced into something without getting cut could be difficult. But then number two, to get it into something without the product looking as being tampered with when you pick it up and look at it is a whole other thing too. It would be difficult. I could see needles being a lot easier to get into something because they're just tiny, you know, little holes. But a razor blade, and that's always been the urban legend, always seemed to me to be a bit like, that would just be so obvious. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I've never attempted to put a razor blade in an apple or into a Three Musketeers bar, but I would think it would not be something that wouldn't stand out.
Yeah, it's just like, what if there be like a cut trying to, yeah. on the candy trying to get in? If I saw that, I would just be like, nope, I'm done. I'm done.
That's really what I've always wondered too. I mean, I've never done it. I've never seen it, but I've always wondered, what exactly would that be like?
Like, wouldn't they have to, like, remold it? Like, if they had to, like, put a razor blade in, like, a Reese's Pieces, wouldn't they have to, like, take off the top and then, like, put more chocolate on top of it?
You would almost think something like that would happen, or it would be very evident.
It would be so, like, you would know it would be tampered with.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing I wanted to talk about was, is this something we should be cautious about?
Something we should really be worried about or really concerned with?
Yeah.
It's something I think we need to be cognizant of, aware of. And that means checking your kids' candy. And that means kids checking candy. There's never going to be a slowdown, it seems, in our world of people trying to do bad things. So that's not to say that some year suddenly, boom, this is a big issue again. It was 20 years ago where it was a big issue again, where people were actually putting needles into Snickers. That's not to say it couldn't happen again. So should we be concerned? Has this happened? Yes. Has it happened to the level at which I think the fear makes it feel like it is? No.
No.
But that doesn't mean that it's not there.
Yeah, because obviously it's there. And some people might even be trying to bring this back.
Do you know what that's called? When somebody tries to do something that they either read about or that somebody else did at a different point in time?
No.
Copycat.
Oh, yeah, copycat. I thought you were going to say something else.
No, copycat, that's what you're like when there's murders and things like that. There's sometimes concern of copycat killers. But when there's some sort of weird tragedy or weird event that takes place or weird action that someone does, that's always a concern. Of people kind of off in the wings going, I wanted to do that too. And then they start doing that. Sometimes copycat things can be worse than the original. So that's what we want to be concerned, because this is a thing. It does happen. It has happened. And it could happen again. In Halloween of 82, there was a number of random non-Halloween poisonings. Okay.
Okay.
And sometimes events that have a lot of buzz about them but have nothing to do with something else like Halloween or another date or event, because they happen, people connect dots and put things together, and then they start thinking, well, if that could happen there, that could happen here. And because in the early 80s this was a big concern around Halloween, when people started discovering that, oh my God, Tylenol bottles of Tylenol medicine, headache medicine, had been tampered with. Then it really went into the Halloween season of parents going, oh my God, if they can poison Halloween or poison Tylenol bottles, they could easily get in there and they could do something to my children's Halloween candy. So the Tylenol poisoning, let me explain that a little bit. It killed 7 people. The crazed madman tampering with kids' Halloween candy treats, it's been established as more of a boogeyman thing over many years, but there have been some cases. The aftermath of the Tylenol poisonings and the sudden spate of the Halloween tamperings around the same time is where a lot of this concern comes from. According to Wikipedia, the Chicago Tylenol murders were a series of poisoning deaths that resulted from drug tampering in the Chicago metropolitan area in 82. Victims had taken Tylenol-branded acetaminophen capsules that had been laced with potassium cyanide. A total of 7 people died in the original poisonings, with several more deaths and more copycat people doing it. See, so people heard about people doing this to Tylenol bottles in Chicago. Then other people out there said, well, that'd be really easy to do. I'm going to start doing that. What ends up happening is Tylenol has to recall all of their products and get them off the shelves so people aren't doing this.
What exactly is Tylenite?
Tylenol?
Yeah. Well, not Tylenol, the stuff that they use to poison it.
What is the drug that they put in there? The potassium cyanide?
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
It's a type of poison.
Oh.
That will kill you. That if a human ingests it, will kill them. So people were putting poison capsules into Tylenol bottles, and they looked just like Tylenol, and people were taking them. No suspect was ever charged or convicted in the poisonings. That's the interesting thing. In a New York City resident, James Williams Lewis was convicted for extortion for sending a letter to Johnson & Johnson that took credit for the deaths and demanded $1 million to stop, but evidence tying him to the actual poisoning never emerged. That was someone who wasn't necessarily copycatting it, but wanted to cash in and thought, I'm going to say it's me anonymously, and maybe I'll get $1 million. And so he was like confessing to a crime he did not commit, hoping he would never get caught, but get $1 million. It obviously did not work out. It did, though, when you have stuff like this happen, change tends to occur. So the incidents led to reforms in the packaging of over-the-counter substances and to the federal anti-tampering laws. Johnson & Johnson, which is a company that makes some of these things, to reduce the deaths and warn the public of the poisoning risks, They've been widely praised for their reaction to this. What basically they have going on now, when you open a bottle of Tylenol or any medicine, you have the super twist cap, the childproof cap.
Yeah.
You have cotton that's jammed into bottles. You have seals on bottles. Prior to that, in the early 80s and before that, you could go to the drugstore and you could just pop open that thing and there wouldn't be a seal there. There would just be, there's your medicine. You take it. But because people started tampering and doing things with these or stealing or all these different ways of getting into the drug or the product prior to purchasing and then someone else purchasing it, they put those things in place, anti-tamper methods. So people can't easily, put the fake tablets in a Tylenol jar or Flintstones vitamins and make kids think they're Flintstones and they're potassium cyanide. They're not. That's why if you get a bottle of medicine and you open it and you see that seal is broken, you don't use that bottle of medicine. You take it back to the store and return it and say, this was tampered with. There's a lot of ways of checking for tampering, and that's why they have those things. It's like back before there was these modern methods of showing if something was tampered with, you know what they would do? Not necessarily with medicine, but with a lot of other things. They would dip the seal of objects in wax. And then if you saw that wax was broken, you knew someone else had already opened it other than the manufacturer, the creator of the product.
Yeah.
And that's what kept it safe.
So, why exactly do all these poisonings exist?
Well, because there's bad people out there.
But who invented them?
Nobody specifically, invented them. There's always been somebody out there that's has ill will as an intent. I don't think it's the mass of the population, but there's certainly people out there that, you know, they don't have a compass as to what's right and what's wrong, and they get some sort of joy out of doing this. It's either it's a mental illness or it's something, but they're out there, and that's where the rest of us who are not out to poison others with Halloween candy or Tylenol or whatever, we just have to be aware and vigilant. It's all part of being aware of our surroundings more than anything else. Doesn't mean we have to live our lives in fear or be scared of trick-or-treating or getting candy or anything like that. It just means don't be stupid. You know, if you see something that looks wrong or off, say something. You know, it should be pointed out. You know what you should do if what should be normal is not normal, so you don't put yourself in a bad situation.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stupid people out there, but that's why cautionary tales exist, to warn you about these things.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It's one of those things where, there's a lot of unintentional stupidity out there where people aren't trying to do stupid things or make stupid choices, but, you fall into traps that if you don't know, you don't know, and what you don't know, you don't know, and that's why there's cautionary tales.
Yeah, to give you a heads up before these things happen.
Exactly.
Well, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you download podcasts. And I think that's going to wrap up this episode for today. Goodbye. I'm Harper. Thanks for listening.